I'm Marco Werman, and you're tuned to The World. Three recent snapshots for you from Europe. In France yesterday, immigration policies were front and center in the right-wing presidential primary. In Serbia today, a street brawl in the capital Belgrade led to the death of one migrant and another injured. And in the Netherlands, talks between the central government and Dutch cities on the so-called bread, bath, and bed deal to give temporary food and shelter have broken down. Three snapshots that show that across Europe, countries are still grappling with how they treat migrants and refugees. 21-year-old Fares Al-Duferi left his native Kuwait at the age of 15, and he's been on the move ever since. Reporter Adeline Sia caught up with him in the city of Leeds in England.
When I first met Fares Al-Duferi, he was living at the migrant camp of Grand Sainte near Dunkirk in northern France. He'd been stuck there for 6 months and was beginning to despair about his future and living conditions, cooped up in a tiny wooden shelter.
We're living like chicken in farm. In the night we get to sleeping, and then in the morning we get the food, not more.
He was longing to get to the United Kingdom, where he has family. After a trek of thousands of miles through Syria, Lebanon, and Europe, all that was left to do was cross the narrow English Channel. But that was also one of the most forbidding parts of his journey. 2 months after we'd met at the camp, out of the blue, Fares messaged me a Google map pinpointing his location, downtown Birmingham, England. He had arrived at his destination. He later told me that he'd made this frightening trip on the back of a truck after dozens of attempts.
The chance came to me in 8 p.m. in the night, and the smuggler he said, "You must go to trying tonight."
Once it crossed into England, Fares jumped off the truck and made his way to the town of Croydon, where he had his initial asylum interview. Later on, he was dispatched to government housing in Leeds up north, where he now lives with his mother and one of his brothers. After spending months sleeping in tents and shelters, Fares finally gets to live in a brick-and-mortar building again. He invites me in their modest flat on a residential street.
This is in my home. It changed from the chicken house to a small flat. And I'm happy for that. I have 2 rooms and 1 chicken. And 1 kitchen.
With true Middle Eastern hospitality, Fares's mother brings in a tray of hot tea. As we sip the sweet tea, Fares reminds me that he's stateless, that he comes from a family of Bedouins who are not recognized as lawful citizens in Kuwait. Even though he says he was born there, he has no documents to prove it. So no papers means no driver's license, no access to higher education or health care. That's why he and his family left Kuwait, to pursue a normal life. Fares had to recount all this to the immigration officer who first interviewed him in the UK.
I give him my story, what I see, what I have in England. They come from the best situation in the world, from the chicken house. And then he say, "Okay, you don't have any paper. So how can you prove your name?" I said, "I don't know. Just I come to you to help me." He said, "Okay, this is the small ID card. This show you are like asylum seeker. So keep it and don't lose it."
This was a turning point in Fares's life. Until that day, he had never held any official document bearing his name or photo. So this card felt like a treasure to him.
And the first time when he gave me my hand, actually I cried. And he said, "Why you cried?" I said, "This is the first time I get this small card and with my picture, with my name, my nationality." So
is it like being kind of born officially in a way?
I don't know how can I say the English, but was like I make it. Like a dream be the truth in my life.
But huge success.
Yeah, is the first success in my life. Not more.
As Fares knows, that priceless photo ID, making him an official asylum seeker, is not a guaranteed ticket to permanent residency in the UK. And there are many immigration hurdles ahead. But for the time being, at least, Fares says he feels welcome here in Leeds. Though he could do without this nagging thing in the neighbourhood.
And you even have ice cream trucks coming by.
Yeah, but I don't love it.
Fares takes me on a quick tour of the small apartment.
All right, so it's a nice size room.
Yeah.
This is where your brother stays?
Yeah, I was meant for my brother.
In the back of the house, there's a tiny garden. Growing vegetables there could come in handy, considering that Faris's food allowance is only £35. That's about $42 per week. But even just having a regular kitchen is very gratifying.
I can cook, wash my clothes, eating on my table and eating what I want, cook what I want. Like the normal human, I have a place. It's better than a chicken house in the camp.
It strikes me that Faris has come a long way from his days in the Grand Saint camp, which migrants refer to as the jungle. But he's grateful that his experience there opened him up to other people and cultures. The day I visited him in Leeds, a Kurdish friend from the camp joined us. 26-year-old Sarhang Omar Shera says their friendship is highly unusual.
When I hugged him in the jungle, I said to him, I really don't like Arabian people, but I really like you. All the time I said to him, because in Middle East, Arabian people, they don't like Kurdish people.
That's why Faris says their friendship is a remarkable achievement.
We changed something in our life. We've broken some rules. We broke the racism between Arabic and Kurdish peoples between different countries.
Faris says learning English not only enabled him to communicate and make friends like Sarhang, but it helped him survive. Now he hopes to be able to study the language and someday earn a living as a translator. For now, though, he's in limbo, waiting to hear about his asylum status, but relieved he's made it this far.
I am very lucky to make him be in England. The hope start again. I was very lucky.
For The World, Adeline Cyr, Leeds, England.